the vicar of Christ on earth himself, in return for spreading the word of God.
I don't believe it, she exclaimed.
Please translate what I said, Signora. It is honto. She obeyed and spoke at length, obviously unsettled. Then,
My master says you are just trying to poison him against your enemies. What is the truth? On your own life, Signor.
Pope Alexander VI set the first line of demarcation in 1493, Blackthorne commenced, blessing Alban Caradoc, who had hammered so many facts into him when he was young, and Father Domingo for informing him about Japanese pride and giving him clues to Japanese minds. In 1506, Pope Julius II sanctioned changes to the Treaty of Tordesillas, signed by Spain and Portugal in 1494, which altered the line a little. Pope Clement VII sanctioned the Treaty of Saragossa in 1529, barely 70 years ago, which drew a second line here. His finger traced a line of longitude in the sand, which cut through the tip of southern Japan. This gives Portugal the exclusive right to your country, all these countries, from Japan, China, to Africa, in the way I have said, to exploit exclusively, by any means, in return for spreading Catholicism. Again he waited, and the woman hesitated, in turmoil, and he could feel Torunaga's growing irritation at having to wait for her to translate. Mariko forced her lips to speak and repeated what he had said. Then she listened to Blackthorne again, detesting what she heard.
Is this really possible? She asked herself. How could His Holiness say such things? Give our country to the Portuguese? It must be a lie. But the pilot swore by the Lord Jesus. The pilot says, Lord, she began, in the days that these decisions were made by His Holiness the Pope, all their world, even the Anjinsan's country, was Catholic Christian. The schism had not yet occurred. So these papal decisions would, of course, be binding on all nations. Even so, he adds that though the Portuguese have exclusivity to exploit Japan, Spain and Portugal are quarrelling incessantly about the ownership because of the richness of our trade with China.
What's your opinion, Kiri-san? Torunaga said, as shocked as the others. Only the boy toyed with his fan uninterestedly.
He believes he's telling the truth, Kiri said. Yes, I think that. But how to prove it? Or part of it?
How would you prove it, Mariko-san? Torunaga asked, most perturbed by Mariko's reaction to what had been said, but very glad that he had agreed to use her as interpreter.
I would ask Father Tsuko-san, she said. Then, too, I would send someone, a trusted vassal, out into the world to see. Perhaps with the Anjinsan.
Kiri said, if the priest does not support these statements, it may not necessarily mean this Anjinsan is lying, eh? Kiri was pleased that she had suggested using Mariko as an interpreter when Torunaga was seeking an alternative to Tsuko-san. She knew Mariko was to be trusted, and that once Mariko had sworn by her alien god, she would ever be silent under rigorous questioning by any Christian priest.
The less those devils know, the better, Kiri thought. And what a treasure of knowledge this barbarian has!
Kiri saw the boy yawn again, and was glad of it.
The less the child understands, the better, she told herself.
Then she said,
why not send for the leader of the Christian priests and ask about these facts? See what he says. Their faces are open, mostly, and they have almost no subtlety.
Torunaga nodded, his eyes on Mariko. From what you know about the southern barbarians, Mariko-san, would you say that a pope's orders would be obeyed?
Without doubt.
His orders would be considered as though the voice of the Christian God was speaking?
Yes.
Would all Catholic Christians obey his orders?
Yes,
Even our Christians here?
I would think, yes.
Even you?
Yes, sir. If it was a direct order from His Holiness to me personally. Yes, for my soul's salvation.
Her gaze was firm.
But until that time, I will obey no man but my liege lord, the head of my family, or my husband. I am Japanese. A Christian, yes. But first, I am samurai.
I think it would be good, then, that this holiness stays away from our shores.
Toranaga thought for a moment. Then he decided what to do with the barbarian, Anjin-san.
Tell him!
He stopped. All their eyes went to the path and to the elderly woman who approached. She wore the cowled habit of a Buddhist nun. Four greys were with her. The greys stopped, and she came on alone.
Chapter 17. They all bowed low. Toranaga noticed that the barbarian copied him and did not get up or stare, which all barbarians except Tsuku-san would have done, according to their own custom.
The pilot learns quickly, he thought, his mind still blazing from what he had heard.
10,000 questions were crowding him, but according to his discipline, he channeled them away temporarily to concentrate on the present danger. Kiri had scurried to give the old woman her cushion and helped her to sit, then knelt behind her, in motionless attendance.
Thank you, Kiritsubo-san,
the woman said, returning their bow. Her name was Yodoko. She was the widow of the Taiko, and now, since his death, a Buddhist nun.
I'm sorry to come uninvited and to interrupt you, Lord Toranaga.
You're never unwelcome or uninvited, Yodoko-sama.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
She glanced at Blackthorn and squinted to try to see better.
But I think I did interrupt. I can't see who. Is he a barbarian? My eyes are getting worse and worse. It's not Tsuku-san, is it?
No, he's the new barbarian, Toranaga said.
Oh, him.
Yodoko peered closer.
Please tell him I can't see very well, hence my impoliteness.
Mariko did as she was told.
He says many people in his country are short-sighted, Yodoko-sama, but they wear spectacles. He asked if we have them. I told him yes, some of us, from the southern barbarians, that you used to wear them, but don't anymore. Yes, I prefer the mist that surrounds me. Yes, I don't like a lot of what I see nowadays.
Yodoko turned back and looked at the boy, pretending to have just seen him.
Oh, my son, so there you are. I was looking for you. How good it is to see the Kampak.
She bowed deferentially.
Thank you, First Mother.
Yeomon beamed and bowed back.
Oh, you should have heard the barbarian. He's been drawing us a map of the world and telling us funny things about people who don't bathe at all. Never in their whole lives. And they live in snow houses and wear skins, like evil kami.
The old lady snorted.
The less they come here, the better, I think, my son. I could never understand them, and they always smell so horrible. I could never understand how the Lord Taiko, your father, could tolerate them. But then he was a man, and you're a man, and you've more patience than a lowly woman. You've a good teacher, Yeomon-sama.
Her old eyes flicked back to Toranaga.
Lord Toranaga's got more patience than anyone in the Empire.
Patience is important for a man, vital for a leader, Toranaga said. And a thirst for knowledge is a good quality too, eh, Yeomon-sama? And knowledge comes from strange places.
Yes, uncle. Oh, yes,
Yeomon said.
He's right, isn't he, First Mother? Yes, yes, I agree. But I'm glad I'm a woman and don't have to worry about these things, eh?
Yodoko hugged the boy, who had come to sit beside her.
So, my son, why am I here? To fetch the Kampak. Why? Because the Kampak is late for his food and late for his writing lessons. I hate writing lessons, and I'm going swimming.
Torunaga said with mock gravity,
When I was your age, I used to hate writing too. But then, when I was 20, I had to stop fighting battles and go back to school. I hated that worse.
Go back to school, Uncle? After leaving it forever? Oh, how terrible!
A leader has to write well, Yemon-sama. Not only clearly, but beautifully. And the Kampak, better than anyone else. How else can he write to his Imperial Highness or to the great daimyos? A leader has to be better than his vassals in everything, in every way. A leader has to do many things that are difficult.
Yes, Uncle. It's very difficult to be Kampak.
Yemon frowned importantly.
I think I'll do my lessons now, and not when I'm 20, because then I'll have important matters of state.
They were all very proud of him.
You're very wise, my son, said Yodoko. Yes, First Mother. I'm wise like my father, as my mother says. When's Mother coming home?
Yodoko peered up at Torunaga.
Soon?
I hope very soon,
Torunaga said. He knew Yodoko had been sent to fetch the boy by Ishido. Torunaga had brought the boy and the guards directly to the garden to further irritate his enemy. Also to show the boy the strange pilot, and so deprive Ishido of the pleasure of providing that experience for him.
It's very wearisome being responsible for my son, Yodoko was saying. It would be very good to have the Lady Ochiba here in Osaka, home again. Then I can get back to the temple, ne? How is she? And how is the Lady Genchiko?
They're both in excellent health,
Torunaga told her, chortling to himself. 9 years ago, in an unusual show of friendship, the Taiko had privately invited him to marry Lady Genjiko, the younger sister of Lady Ochiba, his favourite consort.
Then our houses will be joined together forever, ne?
The Taiko had said.
Yes, sire. I will obey, though I do not deserve the honour.
Torunaga had replied deferentially, desiring the link with the Taiko. But he knew that though Yodoko, the Taiko's wife, might approve, his consort Ochiba hated him and would use her great influence over the Taiko to prevent the marriage. And, too, it was wiser to avoid having Ochiba's sister as his wife, for that would give her enormous powers over him, not the least of which was the keys to his treasury. But if she were to marry his son, Sudara, then Torunaga, as supreme head of the family, would have complete domination. It had taken all his skill to maneuver the marriage between Sudara and Genjiko, but it had happened, and now Genjiko was priceless to him as a defense against Ochiba, because Ochiba adored her sister.
My daughter-in-law isn't in labor yet. It was expected to begin yesterday, but I would imagine the Lady Ochiba will leave immediately. There's no danger.
After three girls, it's time Genchiko gave you a grandson, eh? I will say prayers for his birth.
Thank you, Torunaga said, liking her as always, knowing that she meant it, even though he represented nothing but danger to her house.
I hear your Lady Sazuko's with child.
Yes, I'm very fortunate.
Torunaga basked in the thought of his newest consort, the youth of her, the strength of her, and the warmth.
I hope we have a son, he told himself. Yes, that would be very good. 17's a good age to have a first child, if you've perfect health, as she has. Yes, I'm very fortunate.
Buddha has blessed you.
Yodoko felt a twinge of envy. It seemed so unfair that Torunaga had 5 sons living, and 4 daughters and 5 granddaughters already, and with this child of Sazuko soon to arrive, and still many strong years left in him, and many consorts in his house, he could sire many more sons. But all her hopes were centered on this one seven-year-old child, her child as much as Ochiba's.
Yes, he's as much my son, she thought. How I hated Ochiba in the beginning.
She saw them all staring at her, and she was startled.
Yes?
Yeamon frowned.
I said, can we go and have my lessons first, Mother? I said it 2 times. I'm sorry, my son. I was drifting away. That's what happens when you get old. Yes. Come along, then.
Kiri helped her up. Yeamon ran off ahead. The greys were already on their feet, and one of them caught him and affectionately swung him onto his shoulders. The 4 samurai who had escorted her waited separately.
Walk with me a little, Lord Toranaga, would you please? I need a strong arm to lean on.
Toranaga was on his feet with surprising agility. She took his arm, but did not use his strength.
Yes, I need a strong arm. Yeamon does. And so does the realm.
I'm always ready to serve you, Toranaga said. When they were away from the others, she said quietly,
Become sole regent. Take the power and rule yourself until Yeamon becomes of age.
The Tycho's testament forbids this, even if I wished it, which I don't. The curbs he made preclude one regent's taking power. I don't seek sole power. I never have.
Tora-chan,
she said, using the nickname that Tycho had given him so long ago.
We have few secrets, you and I. You could do it, if you wished. I will answer for the Lady Ochiba. Take the power for your own lifetime. Become shogun and make...
Lady, what you say is treason. I do not seek to be shogun.
Of course, but please listen to me a last time. Become shogun. Make Yeamon your sole heir. Your sole heir. He could be shogun after you. Isn't his bloodline Hujimoto? Through Lady Ochiba, back to her grandfather Goroda, and through him back to antiquity? Hujimoto!
Toranaga stared at her.
You think the daimyos would agree to such a claim? Or that His Highness, the Son of Heaven, could approve the appointment?
No, not for Yeamon by himself. But if you were shogun first, and you adopted him, you could persuade them, all of them. We will support you, the Lady Ochiba and I.
She has agreed to this?
Asked Toranaga, astounded.
No, we've never discussed it. It's my idea, but she will agree. I will answer for her, in advance.
This is an impossible conversation, lady.
You can manage Ishido and all of them. You always have. I'm afraid of what I hear, Tora-chan. Rumors of war, the taking of sides, and the dark centuries beginning again. When war begins, it will go on forever and eat Yeamon up.
Yes. I believe that, too. Yes, if it begins, it will last forever.
Then take the power. Do what you wish, to whomever you wish, however you wish. Yeamon's a worthy boy. I know you like him. He has his father's mind, and with your guidance, we would all benefit. He should have his heritage.
I'm not opposing him, or his succession. How many times need I say it?
The heir will be destroyed unless you actively support him.
I do support him, Toranaga said, in every way. That's what I agreed with the Daiko, your late husband.
Yodoko sighed and pulled her habit closer.
These old bones are chilled. So many secrets and battles, treacheries and deaths and victories, Tora-chan. I'm only a woman, and very much alone. I'm glad that I'm dedicated to Buddha now, and that most of my thoughts are toward Buddha and my next life. But in this one, I have to protect my son and to say these things to you. I hope you will forgive my impertinence.
I always seek and enjoy your counsel.
Thank you.
Her back straightened a little.
Listen, while I'm alive, neither the heir nor the Lady Ochuba will ever go against you.
Yes.
Will you consider what I proposed?
My late master's will forbids it. I cannot go against the will or my sacred promise as a regent.
They walked in silence. Then Yoriko sighed.
Why not take her to wife?
Toranaga stopped in his tracks.
Ochiba?
Why not? She's totally worthy as a political choice. A perfect choice for you. She's beautiful, young, strong. Her bloodline's the best. Part Hujimoto, part Minowara. The sun dances in her, and she has an immense joy of life. You've no official wife now, so why not? This would solve the problem of the succession and stop the realm from being torn apart. You would have other sons by her, surely. Yeamon would succeed you, then his sons or her other sons. You could become shogun. You would have the power of the realm and the power of a father, so you could train Yeamon to your way. You would adopt him formally, and he would be as much your son as any you have. Why not marry Lady Ochiba?
Because she's a wildcat, a treacherous tigress with the face and body of a goddess, who thinks she's an empress and acts like one,
Toranaga told himself.
You could never trust her in your bed. She'd be just as likely to thread a needle through your eyes when you're asleep as she'd be to caress you. Oh no, not her. Even if I married her in name only, which she'd never agree to. Oh no, it's impossible. For all sorts of reasons, not the least of which is that she's hated me and plotted my downfall, and that of my house, ever since she whelped for the first time, 11 years ago. Even then, even at 17, she had committed herself to my destruction. Ah, so soft outwardly, like the first ripe peach of summer, and as fragrant. But inwardly, sword steel with a mind to match, weaving her spells, soon making the Taiko mad over her to the exclusion of all others. Yes, she had the Taiko cowed since she was 15. When he first took her formally. Yes, and don't forget, truly, she pillowed him, even then, not he her, however much he believed it. Yes, even at 15, Ochiba knew what she sought, and the way to obtain it. Then the miracle happening, giving the Taiko a son at long last, she alone of all the women he had in his life. How many pillow ladies? 100, at least. Him a stoat who sprayed more joyful juice into more heavenly chambers than 10 ordinary men. Yes. And these women, of all ages and all castes, casual or consort, from a Hujimoto princess to fourth-class courtesans. But none ever even became pregnant, though later, many of those that the Taiko dismissed or divorced or married off had children by other men. None, except the Lady Ochiba. But she gave him his first son at 53, poor little thing, sickly and dying so soon, the Taiko rending his clothes, almost crazy with grief, blaming himself and not her. Then, 4 years later, miraculously she whelped again, miraculously another son, miraculously healthy this time. She 21 now. Ochiba the Peerless, the Taiko had called her. Did the Taiko father Yeamon, or not? I'd give a lot to know the truth. Will we ever know the truth?
Probably not. But what would I not give for proof, one way or another? Strange that the Taiko, so clever about everything else, was not clever about Ochiba, doting on her and Yeomon to insanity. Strange that of all the women she should have been the mother of his heir, she whose father and stepfather and mother were dead because of the Taiko. Would she have the cleverness to pillow with another man, to take his seed, then obliterate this same man to safeguard herself? Not once, but twice? Would she be so treacherous? Oh, yes. Marry Ochiba? Never. I'm honored that you would make such a suggestion, Toranaga said.
You're a man, Tora-chan. You could handle such a woman easily. You're the only man in the Empire who could, ne? She would make a marvelous match for you. Look how she fights to protect her son's interests now. And she's only a defenseless woman. She'd be a worthy wife for you.
I don't think she would ever consider it.
And if she did?
I would like to know, privately. Yes, that would be an inestimable honor.
Many people believe that only you stand between Yeomon and the succession.
Many people are fools.
Yes, but you're not, Toranaga-sama. Neither is the Lady Ochiba.
Nor are you, my lady, he thought.
Chapter 18. In the darkest part of the night, the assassin came over the wall into the garden. He was almost invisible. He wore close-fitting black clothes, and his tabi were black, and a black cowl and mask covered his head. He was a small man, and he ran noiselessly for the front of the stone inner fortress, and stopped just short of the soaring walls. 50 yards away, two Browns guarded the main door. Deftly, he threw a cloth-covered hook with a very thin silk rope attached to it. The hook caught on the stone ledge of the embrasure. He shinned up the rope, squeezed through the slit, and disappeared inside. The corridor was quiet and candlelit. He hurried down it silently, opened an outside door, and went out onto the battlements. Another deft throw and a short climb, and he was into the corridor above. The sentries that were on the corners of the battlements did not hear him, though they were alert. He pressed into an alcove of stone as other Browns walked by quietly, on patrol. When they had passed, he slipped along the length of this passageway. At the corner, he stopped. Silently, he peered around it. A samurai was guarding the far door. Candles danced in the quiet. The guard was sitting cross-legged, and he yawned and leaned back against the wall and stretched. His eyes closed momentarily. Instantly, the assassin darted forward, soundlessly. He formed a noose with the silk rope in his hands, dropped it over the guard's neck, and jerked tight. The guard's fingers tried to claw the garrote away, but he was already dying. A short stab with the knife between the vertebrae, as deft as a surgeon's, and the guard was motionless. The man eased the door open. The audience room was empty, the inner doors unguarded. He pulled the corpse inside and closed the door again. Unhesitatingly, he crossed the space and chose the inner left door. It was wood and heavily reinforced. The curved knife slid into his right hand. He knocked softly. "In the days of the Emperor Shirakawa," he said, giving the first part of the password. From the other side of the door there was a sibilance of steel leaving a scabbard, and the reply, "There lived a wise man called Enrakuji,
who wrote the 31st Sutra. I have urgent dispatches for Lord Toranaga."
The door swung open, and the assassin lunged forward. The knife went upward into the first samurai's throat, just below the chin, and came out as fast and buried itself identically into the second of the guards. A slight twist, and out again.
Both men were dead on their feet. He caught one and let him slump gently. The other fell, but noiselessly. Blood ran out of them onto the floor, and their bodies twitched in the throes of death. The man hurried down this inner corridor. It was poorly lit. Then a shoji opened. He froze, slowly looked around. Kiri was gaping at him, 10 paces away. A tray was in her hands. He saw that the 2 cups on the tray were unused, the food untouched. A thread of steam came from the teapot. Beside it, a candle spluttered. Then the tray was falling, and her hands went into her obi, and emerged with a dagger. Her mouth worked, but made no sound, and he was already racing for the corner. At the far end, a door opened, and a startled, sleep-drenched samurai peered out. The assassin rushed toward him and tore open a shoji on his right that he sought. Kiri was screaming, and the alarm had sounded, and he ran, sure-footed in the darkness, across this anteroom, over the waking women and their maids, into the innermost corridor at the far side. Here it was pitch dark, but he groped along unerringly to find the right door in the gathering for Raw. He slid the door open and jumped for the figure that lay on the futon. But his knife arm was caught by a vice-like grip, and now he was thrashing in combat on the floor. He fought with cunning, broke free, and slashed again, but missed, entangled with the quilt. He hurled it off and threw himself at the figure, knife poised for the death thrust. But the man twisted with unexpected agility, and a hardened foot dug into his groin. Pain exploded in him as his victim darted for safety. Then samurai were crowding the doorway, some with lanterns, and Naga, wearing only a loincloth, his hair tousled, leapt between him and Blackthorn, sword on high.
"Surrender!"
The assassin fainted once, shouted,
"Namu Amida Butsu!"
In the name of the Buddha Amida, turned the knife on himself, and with both hands thrust it up under the base of his chin. Blood spurted, and he slumped to his knees. Naga slashed once, his sword a whirling arc, and the head rolled free. In the silence, Naga picked the head up and ripped off the mask. The face was ordinary, the eyes still fluttering. He held the head, hair dressed like a samurai, by its topknot.
"Does anyone know him?"
No one answered. Naga spat in the face, threw the head angrily to one of his men, tore open the black clothes, and lifted the man's right arm, and found what he was looking for. The small tattoo, the Chinese character for Amida, the special Buddha, was etched in the armpit.
"Who is officer of the watch?"
"I am, Lord."
The man was white with shock. Naga leaped at him, and the others scattered. The officer made no attempt to avoid the ferocious sword blow, which took off his head and part of his shoulder and one arm.
"Hayabusa-san, order all samurai from this watch into the courtyard,"
Naga said to an officer.
"Double guards for the new watch. Get the body out of here. The rest of you are..."
He stopped as Kiri came to the doorway, the dagger still in her hand. She looked at the corpse, then at Blackthorn.
"The ancient sons not hurt?"
she asked. Naga glanced at the man who towered over him, breathing with difficulty. He could see no wounds or blood. Just a sleep-tousled man who had almost been killed. White-faced, but no outward fear.
"Are you hurt, pilot?"
"I don't understand."
Naga went over and pulled the sleeping kimono away to see if the pilot had been wounded.
"Ah, understand now. No, no hurt,"
he heard the giant say, and he saw him shake his head.
"Good," he said.
"He seems unhurt, Kiritsubo-san."
He saw the engine-san point at the body and say something.
"I don't understand you," Naga replied. "Engine-san, you stay here."
And to one of the men he said,
"Bring him some food and drink, if he wants it."
"The assassin? He was Amida tattooed, nay?"
Kiri asked.
"Yes, Lady Kiritsubo."
"Devils! Devils!"
"Yes."
Naga bowed to her, then looked at one of the appalled samurai.
"You follow me. Bring the head.
He strode off, wondering how he was going to tell his father.
Oh, Buddha, thank you for guarding my father. He was a Ronin,
Torunaga said curtly.
You'll never trace him, Hiromatsu-san. Yes, but Ishido's responsible. He had no honor to do this, eh? None. To use these dung-awful assassins. Please, I beg you, let me call up our legions now. I'll stop this once and for all time.
No. Torunaga looked back at Naga.
You're sure the Anjin-san's not hurt? No, sire. Hiromatsu-san, you will demote all guards of this watch for failing in their duty. They are forbidden to commit seppuku. They are ordered to live with their shame in front of all my men as soldiers of the lowest class. Have the dead guards dragged by their feet through the castle and city to the execution ground. The dogs can feed off them.
Now he looked at his son, Naga. Earlier that evening, urgent word had arrived from Joji Monastery in Nagoya about Ishido's threat against Naga. Torunaga had at once ordered his son confined to close quarters and surrounded by guards, and the other members of the family in Osaka, Kiri and the Lady Suzuko, equally guarded. The message from the abbot had added that he had considered it wise to release Ishido's mother at once and send her back to the city with her maids.
I dare not risk the life of one of your illustrious sons foolishly. Worse, her health is not good. She has a chill. It's best she should die in her own house, and not here.
Naga-san, you are equally responsible the assassin got in,
Torunaga said, his voice cold and bitter.
Every samurai is responsible, whether on watch or off watch, asleep or awake. You are fined half your yearly revenue.
Yes, Lord,
the youth said, surprised that he was allowed to keep anything, including his head.
Please demote me also, he said. I cannot live with the shame. I deserve nothing but contempt for my own failure, Lord.
If I wanted to demote you, I would have done so. You are ordered to Edo at once. You will leave with 20 men tonight and report to your brother. You will get there in record time. Go!
Naga bowed and went away, white-faced. To Hiromatsu he said equally roughly,
Quadruple my guards! Cancel my hunting today and tomorrow. The day after the meeting of regents, I leave Osaka. You'll make all the preparations, and until that time, I will stay here. I will see no one uninvited. No one.
He waved his hand in angry dismissal.
All of you can go. Hiromatsu, you stay.
The room emptied. Hiromatsu was glad that his humiliation was to be private, for of all of them, as commander of the bodyguard, he was the most responsible.
I have no excuse, Lord. None.
Torunaga was lost in thought. No anger was visible now.
If you wanted to hire the services of the secret Amida Tong, how would you find them? How would you approach them?
I don't know, Lord.
Who would know?
Kashigi Yabu.
Torunaga looked out of the embrasure. Threads of dawn were mixed with the eastern dark.
Bring him here, at dawn. You think he's responsible?
Torunaga did not answer, but returned to his musings. At length, the old soldier could not bear the silence.
Please, Lord, let me get out of your sight. I'm so ashamed with our failure. It's almost impossible to prevent such an attempt,
Torunaga said.
Yes, but we should have caught him outside, nowhere near you. I agree, but I don't hold you responsible. I hold myself responsible. There's something I must say, Lord, for I am responsible for your safety until you're back in Edo. There will be more attempts on you, and all our spies report increased troop movement. Ishido is mobilizing.
Yes,
Torunaga said casually.
After Yabu, I want to see Suku-san, then Mariko-san.
Double the guards on the engine, son. Dispatches came tonight that Lord Onoshi has 100,000 men improving his fortifications in Kyushu,
Hiromatsu said, beset by his anxiety for Toranaga's safety.
I will ask him about it when we meet.
Hiromatsu's temper broke.
I don't understand you at all. I must tell you that you risk everything stupidly. Yes, stupidly. I don't care if you take my head for telling you, but it's the truth. If Kiyama and Onoshi vote with Ishido, you will be impeached. You're a dead man. You've risked everything by coming here, and you've lost. Escape while you can. At least you'll have your head on your shoulders.
I'm in no danger yet.
Doesn't this attack tonight mean anything to you? If you hadn't changed your room again, you'd be dead now.
Yes, I might, but probably not,
Toranaga said.
There were multiple guards outside my doors tonight, and also last night. And you were on guard tonight as well. No assassin could get near me. Even this one, who was so well prepared. He knew the way, even the password, eh? Kiri-san said she heard him use it. So I think he knew which room I was in. I wasn't his prey. It was the Anjin-san.
The barbarian?
Yes.
Toranaga had anticipated that there would be further danger to the barbarian after the extraordinary revelations of this morning. Clearly, the Anjin-san was too dangerous to some to leave alive. But Toranaga had never presumed that an attack would be mounted within his private quarters, or so fast.
Who's betraying me?
He discounted a leakage of information from Kiri or Mariko.
But castles and gardens always have secret places to eavesdrop, he thought. I'm in the center of the enemy stronghold, and where I have one spy, Ishido and others will have 20. Perhaps it was just a spy.
Double the guards on the engine, son. He's worth 10,000 men to me.
After Lady Yodoko had left this morning, he had returned to the garden tea house and had noticed at once the Anjin-san's inner frailty, the overbright eyes and grinding fatigue. So he had controlled his own excitement and almost overpowering need to probe deeper and had dismissed him, saying that they would continue tomorrow. The Anjin-san had been given into Kiri's care with instructions to get him a doctor, to harbor his strength, to give him barbarian food if he wished it, and even to let him have the sleeping room that Toranaga himself used most nights.
Give him anything you feel necessary, Kiri-san, he had told her privately. I need him very fit, very quickly, in mind and body.
Then the Anjin-san had asked that he release the monk from prison today, for the man was old and sick. He had replied that he would consider it and sent the barbarian away with thanks, not telling him that he had already ordered samurai to go to the prison at once and fetch this monk, who was perhaps equally valuable, both to him and to Ishido. Toranaga had known about this priest for a long time, that he was Spanish and hostile to the Portuguese. But the man had been ordered there by the Taiko, so he was the Taiko's prisoner, and he, Toranaga, had no jurisdiction over anyone in Osaka. He had sent the Anjin-san deliberately into that prison, not only to pretend to Ishido that the stranger was worthless, but also in the hope that the impressive pilot would be able to draw out the monk's knowledge. The first clumsy attempt on the Anjin-san's life in the cell had been foiled, and at once a protective screen had been put around him. Toranaga had rewarded his vassal spy, Minikui, a kaga man, by extracting him safely and giving him 4 kagas of his own, and the hereditary right to use the stretch of the Tokaido Road, the great trunk road that joined Edo and Osaka, between the second and third stages, which were in his domains near Edo, and had sent him secretly out of Osaka the first day. During the following days, his other spies had sent 4 reports that the 2 men were friends now, the monk talking and the Anjin-san asking questions and listening. The fact that Ishido probably had spies in the cell too did not bother him. The Anjin-san was protected and safe. Then Ishido had unexpectedly tried to spirit him out into alien influence. Toranaga remembered the amusement he and Hiromatsu had had in planning the immediate ambush, the Ronin bandits being one of the small, isolated groups of his own elite samurai who were secreted in and around Osaka, and in arranging the delicate timing of Yabu, who, unsuspecting, had effected the rescue. They had chuckled together, knowing that once more they had used Yabu as a puppet to rub Ishido's nose in his own dung. Everything had succeeded beautifully. Until today. Today the samurai he had sent to fetch the monk had returned empty-handed.
"The priest is dead," the man had reported. "When his name was called, he didn't come out, Lord Toranaga. I went in to fetch him, but he was dead. The criminals around him said when the jailers called his name, he just collapsed. He was dead when I turned him over. Please excuse me. You sent me for him, and I failed to do what you ordered. I didn't know if you wanted his head, or his head on his body, seeing he was a barbarian. So I brought the body with the head still on. Some of the criminals around him said they were his converts. They wanted to keep the corpse, and they tried to keep it, so I killed a few and brought the corpse. It's stinking and verminous, but it's in the courtyard, sire."
"Why did the monk die?" Toranaga asked himself again. Then he saw Hiromatsu looking at him questioningly.
"Yes?"
"I just asked, who would want the pilot dead?"
"Christians?"
Kashigi Yabu followed Hiromatsu along the corridor, feeling grand in the dawn. There was a nice salt tang to the breeze, and it reminded him of Mishima, his home city. He was glad that at long last he was to see Toranaga, and the waiting was over. He had bathed and dressed with care. Last letters had been written to his wife and to his mother, and his final will sealed, in case the interview went against him. Today he was wearing the Murasama blade within its battle-honored scabbard. They turned another corner. Then, unexpectedly, Hiromatsu opened an iron-bound reinforced door and led the way up the stone steps into the inner central keep of this part of the fortifications. There were many guards on duty, and Yabu sensed danger. The stairs curled upward and ended at an easily defendable redoubt. Guards opened the iron door. He went out onto the battlements.
"Has Hiromatsu been told to throw me off? Or will I be ordered to jump?"
he asked himself, unafraid. To his surprise, Toranaga was there, and incredibly, Toranaga got up to greet him with a jovial deference he had no right to expect. After all, Toranaga was lord of the 8 provinces, whereas he was only lord of Izu. Cushions had been placed carefully. A teapot was cradled in a sheath of silk. A richly dressed, square-faced girl of little beauty was bowing low. Her name was Sazuko, and she was the 7th of Toranaga's official consorts, the youngest, and very pregnant.
"How nice to see you, Kashigi Yabu-san. I'm so sorry to have kept you waiting."
Now Yabu was certain that Toranaga had decided to remove his head, one way or another, for, by universal custom, your enemy is never more polite than when he is planning or has planned your destruction. He took out both his swords and placed them carefully on the stone flags, allowed himself to be led away from them, and seated in the place of honor.
"I thought it would be interesting to watch the dawning, Yabu-san. I think the view here is exquisite. Even better than from the heir's dungeon. Nay?"
"Yes, it is beautiful,"
Yabu said without reservation, never having been so high in the castle before, sure now that Toranaga's remark about the heir implied that his secret negotiations with Ishido were known.
"I'm honored to be allowed to share it with you."
Below them were the sleeping city and harbor and islands, Awaji to the west, the coastline falling off to the east, the growing light in the eastern sky slashing the clouds with flecks of crimson.
"This is my lady Sazuko. Sazuko, this is my ally, the famous Lord Kashigi Yabu of Izu, the daimyo who brought us the barbarian and the treasure ship."
She bowed and complimented him, and he bowed, and she returned his bow again. She offered Yagu the first cup of tea, but he politely declined the honor, beginning the ritual, and asked her to give it to Torunaga, who refused, and pressed him to accept it. Eventually, continuing the ritual, as the honored guest, he allowed himself to be persuaded. Hiromatsu accepted the second cup, his gnarled fingers holding the porcelain with difficulty, the other hand wrapped around the haft of his sword, loose in his lap. Torunaga accepted a third cup and sipped his char. Then, together, they gave themselves to nature and watched the sunrise. In the silence of the sky. Gulls mewed. The city sounds began. The day was born. Lady Sazuko sighed, her eyes wet with tears.
It makes me feel like a goddess, being so high, watching so much beauty, ne? It's so sad that it's gone forever, sire. So very sad, ne?
Yes, Torunaga said. When the sun was halfway above the horizon, she bowed and left. To Yabu's surprise, the guards left also. Now they were alone, the three of them.
I was pleased to receive your gift, Yabu-san. It was most generous, the whole ship and everything in it,
Torunaga said. Whatever I have is yours, Yabu said, still deeply affected by the dawning. I wish I had more time, he thought. How elegant of Torunaga to do this, to give me a lastness of such immensity. Thank you for this dawn.
Yes, Torunaga said. It was mine to give. I'm pleased that you enjoyed my gift, as I enjoyed yours.
There was a silence.
Yabu-san, what do you know about the Amida Tong?
Only what most people know. That it's a secret society of 10, units of 10, a leader, and never more than 9 acolytes in any one area, women and men. They are sworn by the most sacred and secret oaths of the Lord Buddha Amida, the dispenser of eternal love, to obedience, chastity, and death, to spend their lives training to become a perfect weapon for one kill. To kill only at the order of the leader, and if they fail to kill the person chosen, be it a man, woman, or child, to take their own life at once. They are religious fanatics who are certain they'll go directly from this life to Buddhahood. Not one of them has ever been caught alive.
Yabu knew about the attempt on Torunaga's life. All Osaka knew by now. And knew also that the Lord of the Kanto, the 8 provinces, had locked himself safely inside hoops of steel.
They kill rarely. Their secrecy is complete. There's no chance of revenge on them, because no one knows who they are, where they live, or where they train.
If you wanted to employ them, how would you go about it?
I would whisper it in 3 places. In the Heian Monastery, at the gates of the Amida Shrine, and in the Joji Monastery. Within 10 days, if you are considered an acceptable employer, you will be approached through intermediaries. It is all so secret and devious that even if you wish to betray them or catch them, it would never be possible. On the 10th day, they ask for a sum of money, in silver, the amount depending on the person to be assassinated. There is no bargaining. You pay what they ask beforehand. They guarantee only that one of their members will attempt the kill within 10 days. Legend has it that if the kill is successful, the assassin goes back to their temple, and then, with great ceremony, commits ritual suicide.
Then you think we could never find out who paid for the attack today?
No.
Do you think there will be another?
Perhaps. Perhaps not. They contract for one attempt at one time, ne? But you'd be wise to improve your security, among your samurai, and also among your women. The Amida women are trained in poison, as well as knife and garrote, so they say.
Have you ever employed them?
No.
But your father did?
I don't know. Not for certain. I was told that the Taiko asked him to contact them once.
Was the attack successful?
Anything the Taiko did was successful, one way or another.
Yabu felt someone behind him and presumed it to be the guards coming back secretly. He was measuring the distance to his swords.
Do I try to kill Toranaga? He asked himself again. I had decided to, and now I don't know. I've changed. Why?
What would you have to pay them for my head?
Toranaga asked him.
There is not enough silver in all Asia to tempt me to employ them to do this.
What would another have to pay?
20,000 koku? 50,000? 100? Perhaps more. I don't know.
Would you pay 100,000 koku to become shogun? Your bloodline goes back to the Takashimas, ne?
Yabu said proudly, I would pay nothing. Money's filth. A toy for women to play with, or for dung-filled merchants. But if that were possible, which it isn't, I would give my life and the life of my wife and mother, and all my kin, except my one son, and all my samurai in Izu, and all their women and children, to be shogun one day.
And what would you give for the 8 provinces?
Everything as before, except the life of my wife and mother and son.
And for Suruga province?
Nothing, Yabu said with contempt. Ikawa GQ's worth nothing. If I don't take his head and all his generation in this life, I'll do it in another. I piss on him and his seed for 10,000 lifetimes.
And if I were to give him to you, and all Suruga, and perhaps the next province, Totomi, as well?
Yabu suddenly tired of the cat-and-mouse game and the talk about the Amida.
You've decided to take my head, Lord Toranaga. Very well. I'm ready. I thank you for the dawn. But I've no wish to spoil such elegance with further talk. So let's be done.
But I haven't decided to take your head, Yabu-san,
Toranaga said.
Whatever gave you the thought? Has an enemy poured poison in your ears? Ishido, perhaps? Aren't you my favored ally? Do you think that I'd entertain you here without guards if I thought you hostile?
Yabu turned slowly. He had expected to find samurai behind him, swords poised. There was no one there. He looked back at Toranaga.
I don't understand.
I brought you here so we could talk privately, and to see the dawn. Would you like to rule the provinces of Izu, Suruga, and Totomi, if I do not lose this war?
Yes, very much, Yabu said, his hopes soaring.
You would become my vassal? Accept me as your liege lord?
Yabu did not hesitate.
Never, he said. As ally? Yes. As my leader? Yes. Lesser than you always? Yes. My life and all I possess thrown onto your side? Yes. But Izu is mine. I am Daimyo of Izu, and I will never give power over Izu to anyone. I swore that oath to my father, and the Taiko who reaffirmed our hereditary fief, first to my father, and then to me. The Taiko confirmed Izu to me, and my successors, forever. He was our liege lord, but I swore never to have another until his heir became of age.
Hiromatsu twisted his sword slightly in his hand.
Why doesn't Toranaga let me get it over with once and for all? It's been agreed. Why all the wearing talk? I ache, and I want to piss, and I need to lie down.
Toranaga scratched his groin.
What did Ishido offer you?
GQ's head, the moment that yours is off. And his province.
In return for what?
support when war begins?